Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her was in between the sessions, the informal conversations with other successful business owners that sparked incredible insights and those aha moments. The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development. And no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. I'm super excited to be joined today by Brooke Ziolo. Brooke has been an executive recruiter with Egret Consulting for 14 years. They work exclusively in the lighting industry with manufacturers, rep agencies, and design firms. So she works on positions including sales, marketing, engineering, and operations from mid-level to C-suite. Brooke was inducted into the Pinnacle Society, the premier consortium of industry-leading recruiters in North America in 2016. And it's interesting, Brooke has always been with the same recruiting firm. She became a partner in 2013. She became the managing director in 2016, and she purchased the firm in 2019. So we'll get into that shortly. Brooke, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. So you were referred to me by Rob Bowerman, who's the president at the Pinnacle Society. So shout out to Rob if he listens to this episode. I guess you must have known Rob for a few years now.
About 6 years now, which when you just said 2016, that just put in my head that it's been 6 years.
Yeah. Can't believe it's been that long. I know. Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah. So Rob is an exceptional recruiter and search firm owner, you know, very successful search firm owner himself. And I do really value the relationship I have with him because he single-handedly refers more guests to the show, I think, than anyone else. Although he has fierce competition from Jordan Rayboy. So it's either Jordan or Rob, but we really appreciate all the referrals that both of those gentlemen send our way. Brooke, tell me the story about how you got into recruiting.
Well, so the Egret Consulting was my father's recruiting firm. So when I graduated college, I told him I would never go to work for him ever. And then about 7 years later, he wore me down and I joined the firm. And prior to that, I had actually gotten into staffing. So I was finding, I was finding the clients and then somebody else was finding candidates for me. And that was on like software sales, IT.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I'd been doing that for like 6 months and did really well at it, but I just didn't like not having control over the candidate side. And when my dad reached out to me again, I was like, it would be kind of cool having the full control of all aspects of it. So here
that's
I am.
Awesome. It's yep. So interesting. I have heard of this on rare occasion, but it's not that common really to have a family, you know, search firm, which is multi-generational and where, you know, there's the younger, you know, generation takes over the firm. And I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
So, tell me, why didn't you want to join? You know, when you were going to university and you thought, nah, I'm not going to do that. What did you think it was going to be? Or what was it that was putting you off?
It was more working with my dad.
Okay. All right.
My parents not had easy. Gone through a divorce and it was, you know, one of those fighting back and forth. And I just didn't want to be in the middle of it. So I think the 7 years helped in that too. So the tempers went down in that point too.
Interesting. You know, that is the downside to family firms, family businesses. My wife, my father-in-law has a family firm that he inherited from his
father, and that's now he's retired and it's gone to the next generation. And yeah, it's not easy. Not easy, yeah, for sure.
We actually worked really well together, though. So it was, oh, cool. It was pretty nice. Yeah. And but in good transition. He's not involved at all anymore. So
awesome. Well, I'd like to learn more about that. So tell me about your first year in recruiting.
It was hard. So I started in 2008, February 2008, which is just probably a month or two before the economy just went crashed. So, I mean, I was in that group where you had to make at least 100 calls a day and basically just pounding the phones. So I did that. I was handed, we had a database of names to call, but it was really old and really dated. And I was calling everything. I had nothing, some lighting, some power manufacturing, like all across the board. And got a couple of placements, but I mean, the economy was awful at that point. I think we, as a firm with six people in it, billed 600,000 that year. So I didn't do well.
Listen, that's not bad considering what was happening. There was blood in the streets. It was a terrible, yeah. I remember it well.
Yeah.
I never want to go through something like that again. That was a trial by fire. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I built a lot of, I kept making those calls and I was calling them every month and they, you hear my voice and you see my emails come through and you learn who I am in those 2 years. And then once things kind of start picking up again, the third year is when I actually had a pretty good year and just kept rolling since then. It's my
amazing. Yeah. So let's talk about that because, well, first of all, the fact that you survived that and you had the persistence to see it through until it started paying off and that it wasn't until your third year that, you know, it started really, all of that hard work started coming back to you. How did you, like, tell me about your mindset during that time and your strategy? Like, what were you thinking? What were you doing in order to, you know, make the most of that situation?
I think it really came down. I mean, obviously I didn't know any better. So, and my dad owned the firm and I really, he was a lot harder on me than he was anybody else. So it's like one of those things you have to do well. You have to make yourself look good in front of the rest of the team. And I was like, the only thing I control right now is how many calls I make. So if I keep making more calls than everybody in the office and keep getting my name out there, that's all I can do right now. So I really just think I kept just pounding the phones until somebody told me no, or I'm sick of you. I think it's just more about the persistence. And that's kind of been my thing all along, is polite persistence. You don't want to be harassing or mean or anyway, but keep getting your name out there and eventually it comes back to you. And I've had people that it's been, how long I've been doing this, almost 15 years, that have called or emailed me back and say, you know, it's been a while since we talked and we've never talked. It's me leaving voicemails after voicemail after voicemail. So they think we've talked.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I'd like to just drill down into this a little bit deeper. You said an interesting phrase there, polite persistence. And this is actually in a training course that I delivered, like I first developed probably, I don't know, 15 years ago or so. And I called it the three P's of success when it comes to either recruiting or selling. And it was polite, professional, persistent. And if you're polite and professional, you can get away with being quite persistent and people don't get upset. So when you said that, I was like, wow, that's, she thinks like I do. That's cool. but say more about this idea of getting your name out there and people hearing your voice.
I think that's how people relate to you, is by your voice. And it's funny, when I first started, so obviously I worked with my dad. He is a totally different type of personality where he's got to use the big words and, you know, very more, maybe he's got his PhD and he knows a lot more words than I do, but he was a lot more formal and he came up through the corporate world. He actually came up through a lighting manufacturer. One of the big, like $2 billion manufacturers. So he was a lot more corporate and I've never really been in a corporate environment. And it took me a while to say, okay, I don't have to follow his personality and his persona. I can make it my own. And I think when people hear you and you being genuine, they relate to you. So there's people that will work with me that would never work with my dad. And there's people that would work my dad would never work with me, because you're relatable and people work with people that they want to work with. So right. I think it was more just the more I can get my voice out there, because I think that's what really resonates with people, rather than seeing an email 100 times. You can see an email, you know, I get spammed in my email how many times a day? 30 times a day at least. And I don't remember their names, but if you hear a voice over and over again, I think that's what really resonates.
Fantastic.
People, they've said we've talked before, and I've looked through all my notes and it's voicemail after voicemail after voicemail. I'm like, we've never talked.
That's hilarious. They just think that they've talked to you because they recognize your voice. And so you said you were calling once a month. How many companies were you cycling through on that monthly plan?
I can't remember. All right. That was like 15 years ago. No.
Yeah, you said like, was it literally 100 a day or like,
yeah.
Is wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I was telling, I mean, that would cycle. If I had to throw a number, it was probably 1,000 companies I was cycling through, and various levels, VP of sales, VP of engineering, VP of HR, presidents, and cycling through those, making those calls every day.
Wow. So then I just like analyzing this, by the way. So bear with me. So did you have multiple contacts at each company? So like 3 or 4 job titles each company. So let's say if there's 1,000, is that 1,000 contacts or 1,000 companies?
It was probably more like 1,000 contacts.
Okay.
Again, I'm going in the Wayback Machine here, but
I understand. But then I like to try and understand people's formula for success, right? And so does that mean that there was about 250, 300 companies that you were relentlessly pursuing?
Yeah, that's probably about right.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Out of curiosity, like now that was 14 years ago now. What's changed in the sort of approach to marketing and business development at your firm in that time frame?
Well, I definitely do a lot less marketing now that my name is out there. And so when I first started again, we had a database that was spanned all across the electrical industry. So it was kind of all over the place. And I honed in on lighting. So now I'm only reaching out to lighting manufacturers and lighting design firms. And I don't do a lot of marketing anymore. Just again, my name is out there. We send out a monthly newsletter that comes with my name on it. And we're talking about industry related things or recruiting things. And so we do that once a month. They see my name once a month there. I still do some MPC, most placeable candidate marketing, but I do that more via email now, just time constraints. And I get a lot of companies coming to me now. I was referred to you through the industry, or I saw your ad. Oh, we also do an ad in a lighting magazine that we have, Trade Journal. Yep. And then, or on LinkedIn, they'll see I'm connected with basically everybody in their company.
Right. Absolutely.
And then the first question is, are you recruiting all those people? I'm like, no, I'm just
right, exactly.
A lot of people. So it's more that way now.
So you do a monthly email newsletter, right? And that's a combination of articles about lighting industry. And then did you say there might be stuff about recruiting or?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That all makes sense. And then you do MPC marketing by email. And how many MPC campaigns would you be running at a given time? Or is it like a monthly or a weekly cadence? What's the?
Now, just because we are so busy, we've got a lot of people coming to us. It's probably once a quarter. I just sent one out last week for VP of sales. And then the one prior to that, I did probably 2 or 3 months ago and actually got a placement off of that one pretty quickly.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was fun. Yeah.
Okay. And then you said you have an ad in the trade publication for the lighting industry.
Correct.
And is that just like a monthly magazine or?
Yeah, that's a monthly. So they see that every month. It's back of the trade magazine.
And is it a full page or is it like what are we
talking about? No, it's probably like an eighth of a page, maybe.
Eighth? And is that, are you advertising jobs or you're just, you branding to get your name out there, or what's the content of that ad?
Yeah, it just says Brooks Iolo, executive recruiter, exclusive in the lighting industry. And then I think it has the positions that we place, engineering, marketing, operations, sales.
Okay. It's so interesting. I can't think of anyone else I've met recently who is doing adverts in trade publications.
Oh, really?
It's really interesting. Yeah. And like, why wouldn't you do that? Of course, because those magazines are still like, I get one for the recruiting industry here, Recruiter Magazine. So shout out to Didi Doki at Recruiter Magazine. That's a tangent. It is a British magazine, but it's worth looking at, Brooke. The editor is actually American, but she's lived in, like me, she's lived over here for decades. I think she's married to a Brit, but and these magazines are still out there. So despite the fact we're in the digital age, why wouldn't you also advertise in print?
I do get people saying, I saw your advertisement in the back. It's funny because I've got two direct competitors in the lighting industry. So they advertise right next to me too. So I know when they say that, I'm like, okay, so you're also reaching out to my competitors too, but still get tips.
And excellent. All right, cool. So, so you've got the monthly newsletter, you've got the ad, you've got MPC marketing, but is your team still cranking out phone calls as well? Or because how many people are in your business?
We have a total of 9 right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 9.
6 recruiters, a researcher, a business development manager.
Yeah.
Oh, and me. Yeah.
And you. And so do you still subscribe to the phone first philosophy? Do your team members like do the 100 dials a day, or have you kind of moved away from that?
We have moved away from that. I mean, I'm still a big proponent of the phone. I think you hear, you misinterpret tone all the time in text or email, sure, in my opinion, or at least I know I do. So I'm a big proponent of the phone still, but the reality is, people aren't answering the phone as much as they used to, and people are going straight to email a lot more. We've had really good success since the market has been kind of going crazy right now. We're and trying to get things out quickly with all the jobs that we have. So we've had good success with the emails and through LinkedIn with the people that are open to work.
Yes.
So we've been doing that, and text messages we've had good success with.
Fantastic. It's interesting because we, in our coaching group, we've been talking about text messaging recently. How do you actually do that in your business? Because there's different people doing different things with text messaging.
So we have RingCentral for our calling system, and I know they can do the bulk text messaging, but we actually haven't done that yet. We just are doing it more on a one-off.
Like manually from people's phones or?
No, so the RingCentral actually integrates with PCR, so we can hit a button and say, text them, and then you can type it on the computer, which is really
that's
nice
easier
for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've been doing that a lot, and that helps, at least that helps get the conversation going, especially if it's somebody that you're trying to reach out and you haven't gotten hold of, and just send a text, not too lengthy. And that gets the conversation going, and then easy to make a call scheduled, because obviously you can make that initial contact through the email or through a text message, but you still need to get them on the phone to talk through why they're looking at a new job and
the
whole interview process.
So you are leveraging technology to send the text, but you are sending them one at a time rather than bulk.
I know, I need to get into the bulk.
No, I'm just trying to understand. And so what I'd be curious about, are you sending text only to people who already know you, or could that be part of your cold outreach? You've messaged someone on LinkedIn, they didn't respond. Okay, I'm going to send them a text message. Is it like, how are you actually, who is receiving the text, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, we'll cold text somebody and say, I'm an executive recruiter exclusive in the lighting industry and trying to get a hold of you because I have something that, something to that effect, but that I think would be a good fit for your career path. And generally, I'll probably say like the title too, so they know that's relevant and we get what they do.
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. Cool. And do you have any idea what your response rate on those texts is?
I mean, generally when I send a text, again, we're not sending them in bulk. I generally get a response back at least saying, no, I'm not interested anymore, or, you know, call me at this time. Yeah. I would say it's pretty high, up in the 90s.
It's amazing. I wasn't expecting to talk about this today, but I'm glad you brought it up, because we've been doing research. Me and my team have been doing research on this for our clients, and it makes sense when you think about it. Like, people are checking their text messages all day. Like, they've got their text messages all. They're checking. I mean, I know people check email a lot, but, you know, the response time to a text is a lot faster than a response time to an email. So not only based on the research, now the research I'm looking at is biased because it's from companies who are selling you their text messaging platform, right? And okay. That, yep. So of course you have to take it with a grain of salt, but it makes logical sense that the response rate is higher to a text, and also the speed of response is higher to a text. But the reason I asked about, like, when we suggest this to people, a lot of times they're very reluctant to cold text someone because they're worried about a negative reaction. And I was wondering what your experience of that has been. Have you had any pushback, or is it like the vast majority of people, you know, are happy that you reached out to them, even if they're not interested in that opportunity?
Yeah, I really have not had a bad experience with sending somebody a text. And again, we're not doing it in a bulk way. Yeah. So it is a little bit more personalized. But again, it's a text, you can't send a lot of characters, or yes. You don't want to, it'll get overwhelmed. But yeah, we have not had a bad response. I haven't had somebody that said, I can't believe you texted me. And I haven't had that at all. And if anything, they're like, I think they're pretty receptive. And then they're more likely to add you to their phone and respond to you later. I think it's been actually really good, because we've been doing a lot of bulk emailing still. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those are not going through. So I'll even say in my text that, you know, I sent you an email and they'll say I never got it.
Yes.
Even though it looks like it went through on our system, but I feel like people aren't getting, especially if you're sending them out via bulk, that they're not getting them as much as they need to.
Yeah. So Brooke, I wouldn't recommend, when you say bulk, what do you, I don't know what you mean. Do you mean like your newsletter just goes out to everyone at once, or?
Yeah. So in PCR, our PC Recruiter, the database that we use, we can send an email to 200 people, and I guess it sends it out every minute to bulk, or like a group of 20 every minute.
Okay.
I still feel like they're not getting those messages.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend you do it that way. We can have a separate conversation about this if you're interested, but there's different email platforms that send it from your Outlook or your Gmail account, and they send the messages, like individual messages. They're not sending a bunch at once, and the deliverability is much better. And also the recipient, the experience of the recipient, it feels and looks exactly like a message that you just personally type to them on a one-to-one basis, even though you might have sent it to 100 people. So it's similar to what you're doing, but I think it will be more effective to do it that way.
Okay. Yeah, send me that information, please.
Do you know Michael Petrak?
I do.
Because Michael has been on the show before, and he has a really interesting method for leveraging text, which combining it with video. So I won't try and explain it. It's easier if people just go back to that episode and listen to Michael's explanation of it. But because he is great at using video. So he records a video about the job, and then he sends that by text message to his target list of whatever, 20 people, with his V card or whatever it has, his phone number and everything in it. I thought it was really interesting. I hadn't heard of anybody else doing that. So,
yeah, I'm not a big fan of taking videos. And I know everybody's telling me to do them lately too. And I just,
It's a comfort zone thing, Brooke. We are like, we really push video in our coaching program. But look, it's not right for everybody. We have some people do their own podcast, or some people just prefer writing articles. But video is a powerful way for people to, you said earlier, like, people do business with those they know, like, and trust, or you said something to that effect. And it's a great way of accelerating that relationship in the same way as when you used to leave voicemails for people once a month, they would hear your voice. It's similar, like they're hearing your voice and they're seeing you mm-hmm. and they feel like they are getting to know you, even if you've never spoken to them before. So
it makes a lot of sense. It really does. Yeah.
And no problem. So I want to get back to your career because you've had a lot of success. And like, I know you were the number one recruiter in your firm, you know, multiple years, and then, you know, before becoming a partner. What is the secret to that success? Apart from what we've already talked about, is there any other strategy or mindset that you think has enabled you to really find your groove there?
I mean, I really think it is about persistence and knowing that things aren't going to happen right away. You know, not everybody's looking to hire right away. So you keep making those phone calls and saying, I'm still here and I understand the industry. That's why I really like MPC calls. I know some people don't love those, but to me, that's me saying, I know the types of people that you need in the future. Even if it's not right now, I understand the industry. So I think those are pretty valuable. And I've been doing those since I started. And people remember for you for that. But I also, persistence and really getting to know niche into an industry. I think being specific in the lighting industry has really helped me.
Yes.
I go to trade shows and meet with clients at trade shows. I just went to Light Fair. That's our industry trade show back in August. And I had 25 appointments in one day.
Wow.
It was really, really tight, but so I didn't get a lot of time, but you know, 10 minutes with somebody face to face still gets that another connection. And it, like the videos you're saying, I do agree I should be doing those. But that face-to-face connection really imprints you into their memory and makes them think about you in the future when they do have a need, even if they don't have one now. So it's things like that. And, you know, obviously connecting on LinkedIn too. I mean, I'm connecting with every single person that I can on LinkedIn. And then people are going to that saying, oh, you're connected with my entire company. So it's all about ingratiating yourself and really getting to know that industry.
Awesome. I think I've like got a good understanding of your recipe for success. So it starts by being really focused around niche market specialization, which for you is lighting. And then it's, you know, you've built out your, we call it market mapping, but you basically have identified all of the decision makers, you know, at the companies that are in your industry. So your database at this stage, you've probably got almost the whole industry, I would imagine.
It's very broad.
Yeah. And then you're also connected with everybody on LinkedIn. Plus they're getting newsletters from you. They're getting MPCs from you. They're getting the occasional phone call from you. You're going to the trade like events for that industry. You're in the trade magazine for that industry. And, you know, month after month, quarter after quarter, year after year of that level of industry focus and that amount of communication, you know, that's just incredible. Like now, as you say, most of the jobs come to you guys, but it really does make sense.
It's like what Danny Cahill always talks about, the market mastery. I've built that over 14 years, and
yes,
it, humble brag, but I think I've done a really good job of it in the lighting industry.
I'm sure. Absolutely. It sounds like you have. So then tell me about the decision to buy the business.
It was my father's business. So, we had talked about it for several years, and you know, I think it made sense. Obviously I didn't want the company to go away. And it's a great company. We have a great team. We all get along really well. And it just kind of seemed like a no brainer. You know, there's a lot of nerves going into that. I know my sales dipped at that point. But yeah, we kind of worked through everything and just made.
Was it like, I imagine it's different to buying a business where you don't have that family connection. Did you still do you still need professional advisors for valuing the business and lawyers and what does the process involve?
So we did, my dad actually had the business evaluated. I probably should have, in retrospect, had somebody else evaluate it that I found as well. But we did come to an agreement where we each had a lawyer. I have a personal accountant, so I reached on them as well and kind of talked through the different ways to evaluate the business and basically looking at taking his numbers out and averaging the last 3 years. And then taking a percentage of that, and that'd be the evaluation of the business. Mm-hmm. And we agreed on that. And he just was like, I'll let you know when I'm ready to retire, but this will be how we figure out the number. And in 2018, he's like, yeah, 2019, if you want to take over, I'm ready to be done. So
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And the accountant is the one that helped me set up my own S corp. I keep saying LLC. My own S corp. So I got all that squared away to buy the company, and then we had an attorney. So she reviewed all the documents with me, and made all the suggestions of things. Because again, awesome. I've never done anything like this, and I'm by no means an attorney.
Well, no, I imagine it must have been a smooth transition because you're already working in the business. You already know all the systems, all the people, everything. So it's not like you're buying a business that you haven't worked in and then trying to take it over. You already knew all the clients. So, was there any challenges or that you hadn't foreseen with that, making that transition?
I don't necessarily. No, there really, it was pretty smooth. I think it was just more, change that gets into my head. I'm like, how, if I'm going to be able to do this right and be a good manager, mm-hmm. and the fear of what if I crash the company and these people have jobs that they're depending on, and the irrational fears that jump into, to my brain anyway. I don't know if anybody else is like that.
Yeah, everybody, I'm sure. Yeah.
But it actually went pretty smooth. My dad did help me out with a loan when we first started to make payroll and all of that. So, and I was able to pay that back pretty quickly and, built up a savings for the business now. So now I hopefully can weather storms and recessions.
I love it. I'm really glad that you mentioned like that irrational fear, because I'm sure that, everybody, almost everybody can relate to that. Everybody could relate to that. How did you get past that? Because, that is, it is a leap of faith, and it is a big responsibility when you're the one that has to make sure that you meet payroll, that, people's livelihoods are depending on you, their families, their mortgages, their, that is a lot when you think about it. How did you overcome those doubts?
I think it's just about putting one foot in front of the other, honestly. Yes, I have this fear, but the company's been around for 23 years now, at the time, 20 years. And I came out in a recession again when we only billed about 600,000. So it's going to ebb and flow, but we have the contacts. So it's, I guess, talking my brain out of the irrational fear that we're not going to tank. We have clients. Everybody knows what they're doing already. Most of these recruiters that have been with me have been here for, 6 to 20 years. So it's getting out of my head and just saying, okay, focus on today. What can you do today? And then this is what you need to get done at the end of the week. And then by the time you know it, 3 years have passed. I went through it in COVID too, because you're like, we had so many jobs on our desk and they all went away, and you get that panic. You're like, oh my gosh, we're never going to get a job board again. And you're like, okay, no, go back to when you first started. You didn't have any job boards when you first started, and it comes back. People will have to hire again.
Awesome. I don't know if you're aware of it, but you just gave a kind of little training session on how to deal with that critical inner voice or that imposter syndrome that tells you you can't do it, or you're not, experienced enough, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, or, people are going to, who are you to run a company? Like, you don't have a PhD, all these kind of things, right? And so the three things you said, one is you sounds like you gave yourself a pep talk to some extent. You were able to look at those fears and actually reason with yourself as to why that was nonsense and, you know, all the reasons why it would be likely to be successful. Secondly is, you said just put one foot in front of the other. So you didn't need to know the whole game plan. You just needed to concentrate on the next step in the journey. And the third thing is you had references you could point to past experiences where, which have been difficult and which you came through from and turned into, you know, a success. So by drawing on those past experiences, you were able to project those into the future and predict a similar outcome.
Yeah. And, you know, I still go through that to this day. So it's just one of those things. Okay. Talk your work back through. This is what you've done. You've been successful. You know, people in the industry, you know, you're very well connected. You can get through this.
It sounds like, yeah, those affirmations, you know,
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone right. It. People like me.
Stuart Smalley, but only not everyone knows Saturday Night Live, but Stuart Smalley, Saturday Night Live. I get you. Hilarious. Do you know, that sketch I think was like modeled on Brian Tracy. Do you know who Brian Tracy is?
I don't.
Oh, he's a personal development speaker and he's from Prince Edward Island in Canada, although you would assume he's American because he lives in America and he, but he's one of the best-selling authors on personal development. If you go to Amazon and search Brian Tracy, you'll see like 50 books or something he's written. And he used to do, you're probably too young for this, but I used to order these personal development tapes from Nightingale Conant and they would come in they were literally cassette tapes that you could play on your Walkman or in your car. When cars had cassette, you know, cassette tapes, and you could put them on. And one of his things was affirmations, like telling yourself positive statements that to sort of boost your own confidence, get yourself in that state of mind, right? And I know there's a lot of people who teach that, but he's probably the most famous example. And so when I saw that on Saturday Night Live, I thought, man, they are ripping the heck out of Brian Tracy here, but it was funny. And then the end of that story, Brooke, is that I reached out to Brian Tracy when I wrote a kind of guide on getting through the last recession. It was 2008 or 2009. I wrote my first ebook, and it was called Recruiting in Tough Times, How to Increase Your Sales in a Soft Economy or something like that. And I just put everything I knew from my own experience, but also like my really smart, successful clients into a like 30 page or 40 page book and put that on the internet. And I reached out to Brian Tracy and asked him if he would review it for me and give me a review. And he did. I was amazed.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. So he gave me a quote that I could put on my website to promote the book. And I ended up getting something like 2,000 recruiters downloading that book. I think that was my early foray into online marketing and lead, you know, digital lead generation and stuff. But
that's awesome.
That was a bit of a rant from the Stuart Smalley. you just triggered that memory, which I'd completely forgotten about. So, Brooke, where do you go from here? Like, this is a 23-year-old firm.
Yep.
You've got a team of nine. It sounds like you're very well established in the lighting industry. Like, what's your vision for taking the company forward?
I don't have huge visions to make it a big company. You know, that sounds like a lot more work and expansion. And we're pretty good where we are. We've got a really solid team of great recruiters and we all get along pretty well. We're trying to do more events because we've got two people that are out of state actually. So that makes it a little bit more complicated, but I do try to fly people from Florida in when I can. But I mean, we've got a really solid team. We've just brought on one more person to help out in distribution or the electrical distributor side of the business. And looks like we might be bringing on one more person to kind of help us expand more into like building automation, IoT, even like cybersecurity. So
okay,
just, you know, more verticals that we can add under the electrical umbrella.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
But I don't have aspirations to be a huge firm. Stick it where it's a little bit more manageable.
Yeah, you say that, but I think if you can manage a 9-person firm, you can manage a 20-person firm or a 30-person firm. So you never know. Don't put any limitations on.
Well, I've already hired 2 that I already said we were good at 8. So
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, I never say never, but good. Right now we're good.
All right. I hear you. Fantastic. Oh, I did want to ask you something you mentioned there, which is you have recruiters out of state. So tell me about, do you recruit nationally?
We do.
Okay. Do you have an office or does everyone work from home, and are they spread out all over the US, or what's that look like?
So we had an office, and I mean, COVID kind of taught us that we can work from home, and a lot of the recruiters really liked working from home. So in November, we let go of the office, and now we all are all fully remote. But we all started here. We all went to the office in Illinois. So we all lived around here. We still go to lunch every Wednesday. And then one of the recruiters moved to Florida, and then I ended up hiring another recruiter, ironically, in Florida. So now we've got 2 in Florida, and the rest of us are up here in Illinois, and the Illinois folk meet for lunch once a week, just kind of help reconnect us and stay a team. But we do Zoom meetings twice a week, and then we also do a Zoom lunch for the people in Florida on Thursday.
Awesome. Well, you started answering my next question, Brooke, which is, how do you manage people remotely so that everyone is A, productive, but B, they feel engaged? Because I think this is the big challenge, you know, in terms of, I've read a couple of articles recently on LinkedIn about quiet quitting, where people kind of just do the minimum. They're not really engaged. They're not enjoying what they're doing, and they just are doing the minimum. And you know, when you're in the office, like I can see a gong behind you there, right? Which I'm assuming is to ring the gong when you guys get a placement. Is that what the story is with that gong?
That is correct. Yep.
All right.
Everybody
awesome.
Needs to hit the gong that. And scare you half to death in the office.
So in an office, you can have a culture around certain traditions like that. You can celebrate together. You can like have drinks on a Friday. You can get lunch into the office, and everyone, you know, you do a training session once a week and bring sandwiches or pizza. You can it's much easier to listen in on what other people are saying or doing on the phone. So like when you're training new folks. So there's a lot of things you can do when everyone's working together that are certainly achievable, but they are more difficult when working remotely. How have you addressed that?
Still a work in progress, okay. But you know, again, we're doing the weekly lunches for the people that are in Illinois, and that helps just kind of reconnect us as a team in person. And we do the Zooms, twice a week, for just basically what are we working on? Kind of stand-up meeting people. We do that. And then also kind of on Fridays, we do a Zoom just to say, you know, what are you doing this weekend, and try to connect personally.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
We went to the Cubs game this summer. We are going to meet at a bar restaurant in a month. Just, again, try to do things that we can stay connected. I mean, it is a challenge. We also do have, RingCentral has a Skype app where we send over, you know, congratulations on so-and-so's clothes. And we all send little GIFs and memes and all that fun stuff. So things like that we try to do, but yeah, it is definitely more challenged. Training is definitely more challenged. I hired 2 people a year and a half ago, and that was when we still had the office. That was one of the people from Florida. So we brought them into the office for 2 weeks.
Yes,
and did all the listening then. But now since then, now we're just having meetings over the phone to say, how'd your week go? What challenges did you have? There's times when I'm on the call with them to a client occasionally, although that's lessened because they've been here for a year and a half now. The one person we just hired, I had her come out to my office because she's fairly local. So she drives out. She's getting on the phone next week. So I'm going to have her come back out and listen to her. So it's just things like that when you can, but it definitely poses some challenges.
You know, in some ways, there are certain things that are easier. For example, because all the meetings are happening, like either RingCentral, are you doing RingCentral video calls or are they just phone calls?
They are just phone calls. Yeah. Every now and then we do have like Zoom meetings, but for the most part, it's phone.
So in either case, RingCentral, you can record calls though, right?
Yes, I can. I can drop in and listen to somebody on a phone call, which I haven't done and I should.
Yeah, I would say it's one of the best ways of training people and also sharing best practices. I've got a contact, his name is Richard Smith. And their company is called Refract, R-E-F-R-A-C-T. And it's really cool what they do. On their platform, basically, you record all of the calls that are going on in your business. Okay. And what it's like an AI platform that then it transcribes all the calls and it analyzes them. It looks for keywords and will give you intelligence like, what percentage of the time was the customer or the candidate talking versus the recruiter? How many open questions versus closed questions? It will look at the duration of the phone call. It will look for certain keywords that you have told it to look out for. And it will then, because you're too big, you can't listen to all the phone calls going on in your office with 9 people, right? But it will bring to your attention the ones that it thinks you should listen to. So you can select certain calls or they can nominate, like your team members could flag calls for you to listen to as well. But that way it sort of curates all the call recordings for you. And you can then listen to calls and give people like really specific coaching to help them improve. But also they can listen back themselves. I think that's just as important. Is they get a chance to analyze their own calls and listen to them. And here's the best part that I hadn't really thought of in terms of call recording. I was thinking about giving people constructive feedback and helping them get better. But what it also does is you can then have a library of great calls and or snippets from great calls. So you almost have like your top producers, your best people, or what, you know, everybody says good stuff sometimes, right? So you just capture like, wow, you did this really well. I love the way you said this to the candidate, or I love the way that you asked this question. And then you record those. And then from a training point of view, your new people are listening to not just any call, but they're listening to the best calls.
That's really
to
cool.
Accelerate their own development. So it's a little bit like when they used to be in the office and you'd go sit them next to your top producer and say, okay, shadow them for 2 days. It's a little bit like that. So I just thought that was a cool concept.
Yeah. Can you actually send me that info?
Yeah, sure. Happy to.
That's awesome.
And do you still ring the gong though?
So I haven't.
I think you should. I think like on your call, whenever you're talking about like the deals that week or what's, you know, good news that's happening it's not as fun as them getting to ring it, but I don't know. It might be cheesy. I don't know, but
now we send little gifs of the gong hitting in the chat.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And my kids hit the gong.
Yeah. I bet. So you use this, we use Slack, which is
my husband uses that.
Yeah. We like it a lot for just kind of the office chit chat. And we have channels for like specific topics that we're focus on that we're working on, but we also have one like just for fun stuff. We share photos of like what we're doing with the kids at the weekend or, you know, silly things. But so it sounds like are you using Skype for that?
It's basically like Skype, but it's through RingCentral.
Oh, it's RingCentral. So it's like, it's like a live chat.
Yep.
With RingCentral. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That so that's cool. Where all of our more goofy stuff is, not so much work related.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Brooke, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I love your story and you've shared, and this is what I try and get out of all of our guests and not always successfully, hands up guys, I do my best, is to break down, get like really specific, tangible takeaways that like how, because it's great hearing about success, it's inspiring, but how did that person achieve that? That's what I'm like. That's the whole reason I started this podcast, is to really try and break down how the most successful you know, people in our industry operate, and you've just over delivered on that. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And if you ever have any questions, I'm a pretty open book and obviously not perfect. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a great pleasure. I appreciate it.